Breaking news today on Jay Sekulow Live. Operation Warp Speed by President Trump was very real as a 94.5% effective vaccine has been announced under Operation Warp Speed. We'll talk about that, the election challenges, and more today on Jay Sekulow Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. Well, there is a lot to talk about. So you thought when President Trump announced something like Operation Warp Speed, he was just using language to try and convince people that, you know, he could do something at warp speed. Well, now we have another vaccine announced with a better effective rate than Pfizer's. This was Moderna's, which was part of Operation Warp Speed, directly funded by the Trump administration's Operation Warp Speed. And it's showing 95% effectiveness. 95% effectiveness. Your flu shot could go anywhere from 25 to 40. On a good year, it's 40. This would be 95% effective. What this would effectively mean is, once this enough of this was produced and tested properly so that enough people could take it, is you would COVID may exist in the air, but you won't get it. And that would be, this is huge for the U.S. economy, especially huge if I say Joe Biden becomes president and tries some nationwide mask mandate, if we can get one of these vaccines in place earlier in that, so we don't have to have businesses, as his advisors want, the complete shutdown of the nation for 4 to 6 weeks. We talked about that last week. That would prevent this.
I'll tell you what's also encouraging about this is that the president utilizing a new approach to getting the approval process, still keeping in the safety measure, so that's important, obviously. To have a vaccine approved at this amount of time and have it available with this effective rate, was it 95%? The flu vaccine is 60%. I think this would be a game changer for the world. I'm not talking about just the United States. But I do not like what some of the Biden advisors have been saying about having this go overseas first. I think it should start here. We have it's a vaccine that we developed, and we've put the money behind, the United States government. Our taxpayer dollars did this. So let's get that information, that vaccine out. I think it's very positive. There's others, by the way, there's others still in the pipeline. So this is not the only one. Fan, what's the sense of this in Washington now that Congress is coming back today?
Let me say something too, because we have to make sure, because Facebook is like flagging everything. It's 94.5% effective, not 95. Don't round up. Even though
94.5. I'll even say 90%.
Well, yeah, I mean, that would be equal to Pfizer. So we have two in the pipeline now that are 90% plus, and the one funded by Operation Warp Speed is 4.5% better when tested than the one that was not part of Operation Warp Speed. $1 billion went to Moderna for about $1.5 billion of research. So the U.S. government paid the majority share of that. And yet you have Biden advisors who say we should only give enough to the United States so where it's under control in the U.S., and then we should ship it out to the rest of the world, really, even though we paid for all of this. And I think, Than, that's going to be a huge debate in Washington, D.C., if the Biden administration moves into town at the White House.
Well, first of all, the reaction in Washington, D.C. to Operation Warp Speed is that it was a resounding success. I mean, this on the heels of Pfizer's announcement that their vaccine was 90% effective. Jordan, effectively in that range, those are both darn near cures to the virus. Now, obviously, they're not rolled out. But look, the same people that are saying that the emphasis of the deployment of the vaccine should be overseas, Jordan, they were the same people saying that the only real problem in the world was the United States' inability to keep it under control. So you can't have it both ways. If you want to say that the problem is the biggest in the United States, well, then naturally the deployment of the vaccine should start in the United States. Jordan, no matter which way you cut this, though, both Moderna's announcement and Pfizer's announcement, a great win for the American people.
And let me tell you as well, we are going to get into the election challenges as well. Those are very much still alive. Of course, you're talking to two members of President Trump's legal team. I was on Newsmax this morning talking about that. This is a very important week for those as well. So we'll take your calls on that as well. 1-800-684-3110. Whether you're watching on Facebook, Periscope, YouTube, or listening, as most people are,
through terrestrial
radio or SiriusXM, support the work of the ACLJ Matching Challenge Month, aclj.org. We're involved in everything.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. So on this Monday, there is plenty to talk about, as this is really a key week. I'll go to my dad on this before we go back to the vaccine news. We'll take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. I said it on Newsmax, the beginning. This is their first morning show launch today. It was great to be part of that. And I said, you know, and then Mark Halpern, who was on after me, not a conservative, but agreed with everything I said, that this is a key week for the Trump campaign, yes. The RNC, our team, to put the right legal challenges into the courts. It doesn't have to be definitive yet, but it's got to get past motions to dismiss and start moving its way.
So big one tomorrow. So tell people about Tuesday that. Is the motion to dismiss has been filed against the claims in Pennsylvania. And in that particular case, that's a lot of the constitutional challenges for Pennsylvania. So that case, if in fact we survive the motion to dismiss, what will happen is we will then proceed to a trial, ready for this, on Thursday. So I was working with the lawyers over the weekend getting that ready. And if you lose the motion to dismiss, you're entitled. It's a final order. I was talking to Andy Economo about this before we went on air. It's subject to appeal, of course, to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. In Georgia, there is a series of suits going to be entered into this week, mostly focusing on signature verification and some of the issues there. The recount's going on as we speak, almost done, I think. The next aspect or the next major item I think that you'll see is the action. There's planned actions in Wisconsin, but it's interesting. In Wisconsin, my understanding is that you have to wait until the 30th. There must be some kind of certification date before you can actually bring the legal challenge in court. But all of that is going on right now, and there's talk about what the state legislatures are going to do in the states that are being contested, especially those that are controlled by Republicans. That's an issue. There's even talk about some states very upset that their voters, the people that voted in their states have had their vote diluted because other states had a process that was not transparent, fair, violated due process. So a state could sue another state. I mean, all of that's possible.
And we're looking at
I think it's going to move very quickly, though, in the next few weeks.
An equal protection challenge clause now in the lawsuit complaint. Georgia. They also may be filing an equal protection clause.
Correct.
Because the way that your signature was verified was much more strict if you voted in person than if you voted by mail. If you voted by mail, they just compared to whatever signature you put in the first time in the mail. And of course, that could have been that's ripe for fraud because anybody could sign anything and then do it again. In person, you know, it's your ID, it's your this, does it look the same? So that's an equal protection issue also, because that means how many votes in a normal year that would have been tossed out because those the signatures just did not match. And then if they're not tossed out this year, that means you have an equal protection claim because your vote got actually canceled out
yep.
by what would or should be an illegal vote.
No, that's right.
And so there's movement in Georgia.
I've spoke to members of the United States Senate. There is some concern there as to what's happening, and they, especially as it relates to the Georgia Senate races. And this election process, which is mailing in these ballots without verifications, is creating, it's fraught for problems.
Well, and it creates consequences down ballot, too, as well, Jay. I mean, look, across all states, even states that maybe we haven't talked about as much, state legislatures, federal officials in those states have definitely a vested interest in making sure that their election was run fairly. And, Jay, I will tell you this. I mean, obviously, I've got great confidence in the legal team that's looking at these challenges here. I'm confident that come the third week of January that the rightful winner will be sworn in, no matter what that is. But I would just say this. I mean, I think voters across America, no matter your political persuasion, should really take heart in the way that the rule of law is working here in the United States of America. When there is a challenge to a close election, the candidate that is trailing has an opportunity to put those arguments before a court. That is what is happening. And no matter what side of the ledger you're on, Jay, I think that should give every voter confidence because that is the way we do things in the United States of America. We follow rule of law, we follow legal process, and come the third week of January, voters across the spectrum are going to have confidence in who the winner is.
You know, I think I want to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110, but let me again welcome, you know, I've always welcomed our Facebook audience. I encourage you, a lot of people watching today, share this with your friends and family. Click that share button on Facebook, on Periscope, through Twitter as well. Share that on Twitter. Share it through places as well, like Parler, where we're on now as well. So you can check out if you've kind of converted over to Parler. We're there too, at Jordan Seculo, at Jay Seculo, and we put the show there as well. But we also did something, you know, that we've always had the feed up at ACLJ.org. We thank people that watch it from ACLJ.org and like our app. But we didn't, we had a closed YouTube video, which means it was broadcast through YouTube, but you couldn't find it on like the official ACLJ YouTube page. Last week, we decided to open that up for a couple days to see if it was a different audience. And in fact, there has been a different audience. And I want to thank those of you on YouTube who are some have donated to be top chatters. Netta on YouTube, by giving a donation, she wanted to say thanks, ACLJ, for your involvement, all your hard work. Maria on YouTube, a super chatter, said thank you all. Jay, lawyers and team, praying for all of you. So that is now open. There's over 1,000 people already watching today on YouTube. Friday, that number got up to 10,000. Now we know, again, the biggest thank you goes to, of course, our friends and family who are listening in support of the ACLJ on radio networks across the country, over 1,000 of those, plus SiriusXM. But I do want to welcome that YouTube audience. We are monitoring it. That's why we're able to give those thank yous out, and we've got our team monitoring it, and we plan to keep it open and keep figuring out how to best utilize YouTube while we are live every day on radio. So welcome again to all of you watching on YouTube. The best way, I guess, to share the YouTube, you could share that link with your friends and family, like in chats and places like that, if you want to send them directly to the YouTube feed for Jay Seculo Live. Let's go right to the phone. So let's go to Dixie in Florida on line 3. Hey, Dixie, welcome to Jay Seculo Live.
Thank you for all you guys do. My question is about Georgia. I know with everything that's going on right now and with the suit, what is going to help stop this if, by chance, there has to be a January runoff election, that we still don't have the same kind of problems going on again?
Well, look, I mean, this is a big issue, and may require, I think, it may require that the General Assembly comes back into session. Because what happened was, in light of the pandemic, they opened up and modified the rules on how they were going to allow mail-in ballots, and there's really no check on this. So it's so easy to commit violations of law here. So there is talk about a special session coming to close some of these loopholes. Now, also,
one of those is the signature loophole.
Yeah, the signature verification
issue. The
other is
that there aren't mail-in ballots for the runoff. There are absentee ballots right then. I mean, that's the difference, is there's not mail-in ballots. This is on January 5th, so I mean, you'd have to be putting in these applications now. Absentee ballots do face a higher standard, but they are worried in Georgia that the signature standards aren't being met properly, that aren't being used properly. But most people are for these runoffs, Dan, I would imagine, won't be requesting absentee ballots. may rely on the fact they think they're getting a mail-in ballot, but most of the votes, I would guess, would come in on Election Day.
Yeah, I think that's correct, Jordan. I continue to be very concerned about the situation down in Georgia for a number of reasons, and one of which I actually think the legislature might want to consider in a special session. And that's the, one of the biggest reasons is that the Secretary of State has only decided to review the presidential race. And Jordan, you and I have talked about this on this broadcast many times, but it would take far fewer vote switching to actually impact the runoff race that, Senator Perdue is now set for. And by the way, I don't want to distract anyone here. That race is set for a runoff. So if you're in Georgia and you care about this race, that's where all of your attention needs to be. But if you're a state legislature in Georgia and this recount comes back and turns up that there were a few votes switched, but maybe it wasn't enough to impact the presidential election, Jordan, they have got to take a look at that, because at that point, that's the only time that Senator Perdue would have an opportunity to request a runoff in his race. And by then, Jordan, I just don't think there would be enough time to accomplish that. So look, it's just another example of when you're in this scenario, every state has to look at their own situation uniquely according to their own state laws. And I got to tell you, from the outside looking in, I think Georgia's right at the top of the list of states that has multiple problems they need to look at here.
I think it could have direct impact, Jordan. We're talking about this on the Senate. I mean,
Senate
seats are up, and this is the control
this
of the United States Senate. And they're
If Joe Biden becomes president, I say if, I don't want to, you know, I know people got concerned last week when I said president-elect, you know, but if he becomes president, this would be the check. This would prevent the Green New Deal, the tax hikes. If one of these two senators, it's probably likely that if one wins, the other wins too, but if at least one of them wins, there's a check on the tax hikes, there's a check on the Green New Deal, there's a check on the most extreme legislation that Joe Biden would like to get to his desk, because it won't get to his desk. And that's key. There's also, it would be a check on his most extreme nominees, whether it be to the circuit courts, potentially Supreme Court, or cabinet-level positions as well. So it would be a check on those extreme nominees, too. So I think that is why I know so much the country is still facing, you know, looking at the presidential election. But if you are outside of a few of these states that are still really in the midst of battle and recounts and things like that, you need to start looking at in Georgia, and if you can, you know, get involved in any way and volunteer on whatever side. If you want Joe Biden to have an all-Democrat government, go right ahead, support that, or support a divided Congress, which will prevent the most extreme measures by a potential Biden-Harris administration. We're working on this government affairs team, of course. Our legal team is all over all these issues. Support our work. November is a matching challenge month, so important. Donate at aclj.org and double the impact of your donation.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
All right, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. I want to talk first because we broke this news, and it is getting huge news. I think it's very important because the Trump administration should be getting the credit for it. Operation Warp Speed has led to Moderna now announcing today that they have a COVID-19 vaccine that is 94.5% effective. That is 4.5% more effective than even the Pfizer vaccine that was announced at 90%. Both those numbers are extremely high for vaccines. Your flu vaccine shot that you got this year, I mean, it could go from anywhere from 20 to 40% effective. Like a 40% effective rate would be a pretty good median. Some years better, some years worse. When you get to 90 to 95%, you basically have stopped this disease. You have stopped COVID-19. If you can get a vaccine out that takes it away from 90, almost 95% of the human population. So why do we have this now? Operation Warp Speed. Who paid for it? You and I, $1 billion of the $1.5 billion. And yet the Biden team, who is advising him on COVID-19, do we have the sound? This is from Rahm Emanuel's brother, that they want to give it to the rest of the world? We do have that. Let's take. No, we don't have that. Okay. When we have that sound, I will make sure we play that for you as well. Because
we're talking about America last.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then the idea again too that we still need a shutdown, because that's what Doctor. We still have that. I mean, which is still insane. Doctor Osterholm. He's also on the Biden COVID-19 team. He just wants to shut down the U.S. government. Just for six weeks. That means shutting down everything, the whole nation. Take a listen.
We could pay for a package right now to cover all of the wages, lost wages for individual workers, for losses to small companies, to medium-sized companies, for cities, states, county governments. We could do all of that. If we did that, then we could lock down for 4 to 6 weeks. And if we did that, we could drive the numbers down.
Yeah, well, there you have it. The problem is it will also drive some other numbers down. It's called – I want to go to Harry on this for a moment. We're going to talk to Harry about something else too. But the idea of closing down the economy for another – this time 6 to 8 weeks, what would – you're a law and economics professor. What would be the consequences of this?
Well, we would likely see a rise in suicides. We would likely see a rise in the instances of other illnesses. So, for instance, people would delay examinations for cancer, for heart disease.
What about the economic impact of another?
And you would also see a rise in joblessness. And if they are basically going to lock down the economy like many states have already done, it would mean that we would disrupt schooling. And this would be particularly disruptive for lower income families who do not have access to the internet. Yeah. So essentially what the Biden approach would do, it would further disadvantage already disadvantaged Americans in the name of coming up with a cure. The cure that they offer is worse than the disease.
You know, the interesting aspect of that is there's a very serious constitutional question, and that is because, I mean, President Trump faced this, and that is, can the President of the United States issue a nationwide economic lockdown? That's voluntarily we did it. We saw it happen in this last time. But then I know that there's resistance in the United States Senate, and frankly in the House too, to do this because of the economic impact and consequences. If this were to happen.
Well, there should be. Yeah, I mean, I would say two things. First of all, in the sound you just played, they said we could pay for a package to shut down the country for 4 to 6 weeks. Yeah, you'd have to do that with money that was borrowed, and much of it would be borrowed from the same country the virus came from. But Jay, maybe even bigger than that, I think it just demonstrates a lack of understanding where jobs come from, where economic creation comes from. There seems to be this thought on the left that you can just throw a switch and you can put people out of work, and then as soon as the switch is thrown back on, they'll jump right back into their job. Jay, I mean, you know this better than anyone. That is just not how the economy works. There is a lagging impact when you take people out of a job and they will just not come back online. Look, we're learning to deal with the virus. On the heels of this wonderful news that we've got a vaccine that is this effective, it would be the absolute worst time to reverse course and start shutting things down again. We need to move forward and we need to open smartly and surely. And all of the signs, Jay, point that we can do just that.
Go to the phones. Frank in Florida on line one. Frank, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
Thank you guys for taking my phone call. Yeah, I was just going over that in my mind about that Dr. Osterholm person and that 4 to 6 week shutdown. I haven't been able to find any work in almost 2 years. And the last job I had was back in June of 2018. Is this package going to help out those that can't find any work or any jobs at all?
We have no idea where he's even getting this number from. That he says in the quote, I'll just read it for you again. He says we could, it for 4 to 6 weeks, so it's not long term, but pretty long. We could pay for a package right now to cover all of the wages, lost wages for individual workers, for losses to small companies, to medium-sized companies, for cities, states, and county governments. So it would be whether or not you somehow tied your unemployment to the COVID shutdowns and something like that, or why you can't get a job. You might get some of those resources. By the way, what about big companies who employ so many people? They're not covered by this plan. So I guess all the secretaries at the big banks, they get no money, Dr. Osterholm. But he says if we would borrow that money. Now, like Than said, when you borrow that money, you know, the number one borrower is for the U.S., China. Literally, I mean, we'd be giving China money back to deal with a shutdown of a virus they created and let spread around the world.
Which is killing our economy.
Yeah. Because like they said, all those big buildings you see downtown would get nothing under his plan. And they employ a lot of people there.
Yeah, so we're going to get to the lawsuits in the second half hour because I want to finish up this economic issue. I think, you know, let me tell you what we're going to do at the ACLJ. We have the expertise. We've got people like, of course, Than Bennett, our Director of Governmental Affairs, Harry Hutchinson, our Director of Policy, who's a law and economics professor, others that have expertise in these areas. We are going to be your voice to counter these measures where they don't make sense. And what I don't understand, if you look at the closing of Europe, which took place where Italy was closed for 2 months, other countries in Europe were closed for months at a time, and as soon as they opened back up, the infection rates went up. So really, the focus should be on getting the vaccine out, not on closing the economy, which looks like it's not working.
Absolutely. So I think it's clear beyond question, if you look at the European experience, the whole lockdown approach in the long run backfires. Because once you reopen the economy, guess what? The infection rate sparks up. And so I think the Europeans, the only European country that has had some success, as I understand it, is Sweden, which never followed the lockdown strategy. Instead, they followed a targeted approach. In other words, they basically asked individuals who were over, let's say, the age of 60 to stay at home. They allowed the schools, elementary schools, to operate. And they have done much, much better than Italy, than Spain, than the United Kingdom. So the Biden people say, let's follow the science. There is very little science in support of Dr. Osterholm's approach.
Yeah, remember this also. It was Nancy Pelosi that blocked the latest direct payments bill. She insisted on state bailouts. So now they're going to come back in January, new Congress. We'll see what they do. We'll talk about it when we come back from the break. If you're leaving us now, we encourage you to go over to Facebook or over to YouTube, where you could catch the broadcast live at ACLJ.org. Support the work of the ACLJ as well. We're in a matching challenge campaign, as Jordan said. Court cases tomorrow. ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate, you get a matching gift. We encourage you to do that again at ACLJ.org.
It's ACLJ.org. And again, share this with your friends and family if you're watching the broadcast. Second half hour coming up. And thank you to our new YouTube audience.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Second half hour coming up. We are going to be talking to you about two things. One, Operation Warp Speed has produced just an unbelievable result. We had from Pfizer an announcement that they've got a vaccine that works at about 90% effective rate. And now Moderna, which was part of Operation Warp Speed. And what does that mean? President Trump created that and made federal dollars available to these companies to do something they've never been asked to do before, which is create a vaccine within a year and then get it deliverable potentially by the end of the year or early into 2021. Moderna has now announced a week after Pfizer that theirs is 94.5% effective on COVID-19. This, again, would be these kind of vaccines, if they go through the process and are safe for most of us to be able to take. And, you know, you start out, I think you do start out with the people that are most vulnerable and you work your way down again. But to keep kids in school, teachers, kids, older people that are more vulnerable. And then, again, you first take care of America. The issue is that if the Biden team gets in, Dan, they have said it again and again. Let me play Zeke Emanuel. He's also like Osterholm. And this is Rahm Emanuel's brother. He's on the COVID team for transition team for Joe Biden. Take a listen how he'd like to take the $1 billion that you spent to get this vaccine and spread it around the world before you get it. Bite 35.
Vaccine nationalism, it's called. Keeping the vaccine for my country is a natural response. Governments are responsible for the freedom and well-being of their citizens. But there's a limit to what they should do, and there's also some obligation to the world. If the whole world is suffering, your country's not going to get better, as New Zealand has shown us, if everyone else has a lot of COVID. It'll come back into your country. So we have obligations beyond our borders, too.
Well, that's fine. But you got to take care of the people that are your citizens, because that's the first job of government. So this is exactly why we're talking about the need of the ACLJ now more than ever, because you can't let this policy go unchecked. We're going to be on top of this. I mean, we already are, as you could see. I mean, Joe Biden hasn't even been selected by the Electoral College yet, and we're already monitoring this stuff. By the way, there was Mariah on YouTube, which is a new audience for us live, asked about these super chats if they're being monitored by the ACLJ, and the answer is yes. I'm looking at it right now. So the answer to that is absolutely yes. Let me ask
you. Yeah, Mariah said, thank you all, and lawyers and team are praying for you. We've had others that have written in as well. So again, we are monitoring it from our team. It's new for us. I think it's our third day doing it. We've got Facebook questions too. Andre on Facebook writes in, Many of us have concerns about the vaccine. I think, again, people hear vaccine right now and they do get a little concerned. I know that there's a lot of people out there have questions about how it'll affect them, especially one that was created so quickly.
Yep.
So what are your thoughts on the fact that it's been created so quickly?
Look, I mean, it's supposed to go through all these various checks. None of that was shortcutted. But I get it. I mean, I've had doctor friends of mine say they would rather have vaccine 2.0. You know, they'd rather be not in the first round. I think it depends on vulnerability, age, underlying health conditions. All of those are factors you make. They're not going to mandate a vaccine. They're not going to say you must take it. But for those that are of certain ages, I think that, and I'm not going to get into medical opinions whether you should take it or not. That's beyond me.
Yeah, your doctor will help you.
Yeah, but there are factors you look at, and at least the process, it's an option that's out there. I have a quick, we only got a minute here. I want to go back on the shutdown thing for just a second with Harry. We avoided a housing crisis. My concern is, I only got a minute here. If we have a 8-week shutdown, we're going to start seeing a housing crisis.
Absolutely, and renters are going to be expelled in some cases.
Yes.
Houses are not going to be built. And Zeke Emanuel is wrong when he claims that we have an obligation beyond our borders. We do not have a constitutional obligation beyond our borders, and so we should take care of Americans first.
Folks, we've got a matching challenge right now at ACLJ.org. This is a great time to double the impact of your donations. So we have a group of donors. They say every donation that comes through in the month of November, we will match that. So you've got to take the initial action. So if you donate $20, that's like $40 for us at the ACLJ. If you donate $5, that's like $10. $100 is like $200. And we're involved in all of this, from election integrity to the vaccine issues to the preparing for the next Congress. Donate at ACLJ.org. Have your donation doubled.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Let me go to one of those phone calls because, again, we're getting a lot of those questions, you know, these other legal avenues available. Yep. I mentioned one of them on Newsmax. I just threw it out there. It's called failed elections. If you have a
get into that tomorrow.
That is there is a federal law on that. But people have questions, too, about the 12th Amendment. Tim in Indiana online too. Tim, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. You know, I had read in reference to the Constitution where we've done this twice in our history where the courts have failed, the recounts failed. Well, then at that point, the Amendment 12 comes into play where we get one vote per state. And we have 37 Republicans. Therefore, obviously, at that point, President Trump's going to be back in office.
Well, there's look, to get to these scenarios, including contested electors, there's a process you go through. It's interesting that the founders envisioned that this could happen, that there could be a situation where the of course, you didn't even have a general election vote at that time. But the idea of our constitutional framework is if, in fact, there is not the ability for the Electoral College to meet and confirm a nominee, that there's a process there where the state legislatures go back and they nominate. And so there is a lot of issues, and just Jordan called this a failed election. We're going to get into that in the broadcast tomorrow. But let me say something about tomorrow. Tomorrow there's a major challenge that the president's team, our team, has made in Pennsylvania on the constitutionality of the election. Harry, you've been looking at that. I know Andy's going to be available tomorrow to talk about it as well. This, of course, they filed a motion to dismiss normal. It's going to be a big day tomorrow.
Absolutely.
On a big case.
Absolutely. So American people, American citizens deserve free and fair elections. And the right to vote is protected by more than the initial allocation of the franchise itself. Equal protection applies to the manner of the exercise of one's vote. And I think it's clear beyond question that the president's legal team has set forth a basis for concluding that there was an unequal manner of exercise in Pennsylvania, which has an indirect effect on each and every state in the United States. So what are we talking about? We are talking about the disparate ability to cure defective ballots in the state of Pennsylvania. So what happened was that in Democrat-controlled counties, they allowed voters to cure mail-in and absentee ballots, but that is inconsistent with the statutory rules in the state of Pennsylvania. In Republican-controlled counties, they actually followed the law. So effectively, we have disenfranchised voters in Republican counties, and we have essentially, in some cases perhaps, doubled or at least increased by a factor of 20 or 30% the votes in Democrat-controlled counties. That's discrimination within the meaning of the Equal Protection Clause.
And that's the litigation aspect of this. There is, Jordan, as you talked about today on Newsmax, there is a non-litigation approach to this too.
That's right. There is something, it's very important in the law. It's part of the federal law. It goes to Article 1, Section 2 about states choosing electors. By the way, all electors have to be chosen by December 8th, so this option would have to be used pretty quickly. But in the federal law, there's provisions for a state legislature to declare the election in the state failed. And interestingly, the federal law doesn't define what failed means. So if you have, and by the way, Republicans control the state legislatures in these states at issue here that would put President Trump over the line electorally. If you thought that you had so much fraud, so much abuse, there were so many problems, there were so many issues with the mail-in ballot, you can't figure out if people voted twice or three times, or how many votes, legal votes were canceled out, you as a legislature can vote and say this is a failed election, and because of failed election, we are choosing the electors, and they could choose electors for Donald Trump. And that is a strategy that could be in place. It is completely legal to do. Now, the state legislatures, Republican-controlled, have to be willing to take those steps. And I think also, Dad, we're still waiting word from President Trump, too. And that I think those are decisions that would have to be made as well at a very high level to start really pursuing those states to take that action, because it's got to be done before December 8th.
No, look,
the electors are chosen.
Between now and the end of the month, there are going to be a lot of legal issues addressed. This is, and by the way, people are saying, well, the president, is he being stubborn? No, the president is exercising his authority and rights under the Constitution. He's looking at he had 71 million people voted for Donald Trump for president of the United States. He has the obligation, in my view, to take this to its logical conclusion. Now, if the courts and if the legislatures rule against him or decide not to go that way, that's one thing. And I think at that point you have to say, look, I don't like the way the election went. I don't think it was fair. And if he says that, I don't think it was fair. I disagree with the court. But I believe in the rule of law, so I'm going to follow the court. How many times have I said on this broadcast, I don't agree with their opinion, but look, that's the law of the land. So, look, the president, of course, I believe, would follow that kind of rationale. But, Harry, if you look at the legal – well, let me go to Than first, actually. If you look at the legislative process, it's going to be – the Electoral College meets across the street from us in just, what, less than a month.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is the process. This is the process we go through, Jay, to ensure that the elections were run with integrity, to ensure that they were valid. This is not extra constitutional. This is actually a check that the states have to make sure that the process was followed legitimately. And look, I don't think state legislatures would move forward unless there was evidence of fraud. It's not a political tool. It's a check against fraud. But you know, Jay, one thing that Jordan and I got into at some length a couple of days ago is the fact that you cannot reach a majority of 270 in the Electoral College by more than just a 269-269 tie. If there were multiple states where the problems rose to the level that they could not certify their totals, it is entirely possible that neither candidate would even get to that 269 level. So that's when the vote would go to the House for the president and the Senate for the vice president. Again, that's like step four from where we're at now, but it's a process that's been laid out since the beginning of our country.
And Harry, it will move very quickly.
Absolutely, and it should. Certainly, the Americans, however, need and deserve a fair process as opposed to a two-tiered voting system. And so these safeguards are in the Constitution. These are legal and constitutional procedures, and the president is entitled to pursue them to the full extent of the rule of law, and he should.
All right, let's go. You want to grab a call, Jordan? Let's grab a call.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go to first to Pete in Washington State on line 3. Pete, welcome to JSecu Live. Thanks for holding.
Thank you. Thank you for so much that you are continuing to try to do, basically, for our country.
Yep.
Yesterday, Jay Inslee here in Washington State, yep, our governor, he actually put out a mandate that we are back down, shut down completely. We're talking about the restaurants, everything that exists out there. I went to Costco yesterday, and the line was extremely nuts. It's because people heard what was going on, and fear basically overtook. But being able to shut this down, his actual description was that we had a considerable wave going through our country at this time, right here in Washington State, and that he needed to shut it down. And I just, to me, there should be some way of protecting the citizens, because we're going to lose businesses. We're going to lose all that basically matters to us. Our children are still locked down, and it's just a really scary time for people. And to have this go on without actual numbers and things, I just think that it's really sad that what we're looking at is a governor that has a different agenda than what the people really deserve.
Look, I mean, this is what the way it works, though, Harry, is the states make these decisions. Governors make these decisions.
They do, but they are subject to the United States Constitution.
Absolutely.
And I think in many cases they have engaged in overreach.
Yeah.
I think one of the quintessential issues here is power is intoxicating, and many of these governors love wielding huge amounts,
yeah,
of power without any checks and balances. And that's one of the things to keep in mind. Yes, governors have emergency powers, but they do not have indefinite emergency powers.
Right. So I think all of that gets looked at in that context. I really do.
Yes, and I think that's, again, when you start looking at whether or not it's so rampant that none of this could get through the court system quickly enough. This is not Bush versus Gore with a county or two. This is, you know, Philly. This is the state of Georgia, how they did signatures. And of course, the voting machine issue that Dominion that Sidney Powell is going to look into, the tech issues, that cases can be made for these states that they had a failed election in their state. And we'll go through this more tomorrow on the broadcast. I think people really need to be explained, because this is different than the Congress or the House,
yep,
choosing. That's when no one gets to 270. And that would be like if not enough elections were certified, which, by the way, in all these lawsuits, Dad, that is a request, is
it
not
is
to certify.
Yeah.
So there's that issue, too, we can talk about on the
And tomorrow the broadcast will be just hours. 1 o'clock is going to be the actual hearing, so it'll be starting about the time we finish live.
Support, yeah, our work, matchingchallengeaclj.org.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
YouTube as well. So for those of you on Facebook, we always thank you for watching the broadcast, sharing it, and interacting, of course. Take comments from Facebook all the time. For our those of you, the majority of you who listen to our broadcast and don't watch it on radio stations, over 1,000 in the country, and, of course, on SiriusXM. And of course, Twitter through Periscope, and also on places like Parler through Periscope. Now YouTube has been opened up. It's got a chat as well. And I want to thank all of you who are watching through YouTube. And it is it's a different audience than was watching on Facebook. And on YouTube, you can make these donations so that you're kind of like get a highlighted comment. And Ryan on YouTube made one of those, so we thank him. He said, "We know fraud happened. Can enough fraud be proven in court to overturn a state's election?"
Well, listen, that's where the rubber meets the road. I think you said it's the put up or shut up moment. And we know some things that have happened that we think are very dangerous. Whether that will rise to the level where the court's going to step in, we're going to find out tomorrow, at least in Pennsylvania. And there's other cases, too. So, look, I mean, I think the evidence is there, at least as to the monitoring, at least as to the securing provisions where they weren't equally applied. So there's a lot of constitutional issues here to unpack. But I think we're going to find out soon enough. I mean, we're going to know in the next few days where that's going. I want to switch gears. Let's take a call. Let's take Shirley's call from Oregon on line 4. Shirley, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for letting me call.
Yep.
I'm calling because I heard the person from Washington.
Yep.
Kate Brown has shut down our state to the point that 6 people in private gatherings can meet with only 2 households.
Right.
And churches are shutting down to 25. And my question is, what can we do? Can President Trump do an executive order to change that? Because
no.
The people that come into our state from out of town have to shut down for 2 weeks after being quarantined.
It's,
and she's enforcing it with law.
Okay. The answer is the president cannot order a state to not do a shutdown order if the governor thinks it's in the best interest of the state. There are constitutional restraints, however, so that doesn't go unopposed. But look, I get the frustration. I got Wes Smith with us, who's a colonel in the United States Army, but also a chaplain and pastor. I know it's been really tough on the churches. Has it come back to any sense of normalcy yet?
No, not at all. And of course, you know, religious freedom is at stake here because you've got governors in multiple states that are restricting religious gatherings, Jay, while not restricting other gatherings,
yep.
Whether it be casinos in Nevada or grocery stores, wherever. And so, you know, religious liberty is at stake here. Governor Cuomo of New York just recently has signed an executive order, getting ready to put it out, where no matter what the size of the church building, and some churches seat 1,000, 2,000 people, they can have no more than 25 people in worship. The governor does not have the authority to do that. Of course, there are lawsuits that are taking place. I think the Supreme Court is getting ready perhaps to hear an emergency appeal on Governor Cuomo's order. But the people need to be very, very concerned that the First Amendment rights that have been part of our country since its founding,
yeah.
as far as religious freedom go, they are being violated routinely.
And Justice Alito said this in a speech he gave at Heritage just a couple of days ago, that he's very concerned about it. We're taking your calls and comments here. Let's go ahead and take another phone call, Jordan.
Yeah, let's go right to the phones. Let's go to Mark in Missouri on line 1. Hey, Mark, welcome to Jay Secchio Live.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And I have a comment. You guys have great work. My comment is, with this outcome determinant logic as far as cheating in the elections, that's like allowing someone to learn how to cheat, you know, or how to steal. Like, you don't let, you know, stealing candy go by, you don't let stealing a toaster go by. You know, it just.
But
it just
the thing is, for the courts to intervene, for the Supreme, especially the Supreme Court of the United States, not in the District Court in Pennsylvania. Okay, they have to constitutional, but for the Supreme Court to say we're going to take a case out of, I'm picking up, for example, out of Arizona, but the president hadn't been able to establish that he was successful at this point in Georgia and in Pennsylvania and in Michigan and Wisconsin. Well, they're not going to take one case that's not outcome determinative. Now, collectively, they could be outcome determinative. And as long as they're being contested, they're outcome determinative. But that's why I think the court, by the way, left Justice Alito's stay in place that we were able to obtain last week. Still in place, because they're waiting to see if any of this at the end becomes outcome determinative.
And you believe, like I do, that this week is big.
I think this is a very big week.
To get them into court.
Yeah, I think you've got some in the court that are maturing.
Yep.
In other words,
some
they're going
need to be filed.
And then some need to be filed. And this is the week to do it, because you're going to, then you're Thanksgiving. Then the week after that is the week before the electors are selected. December, right, yeah. And then a week later, they meet.
And most start certifying.
And most of the states are starting to certify. I think some of the states, doesn't Georgia certify November 20th?
Yes.
So you got some states that are going to be certifying very quickly. So, yeah, this is a very big week.
Carolyn on YouTube, Super Chat, said, thank you, ACLJ, for giving us a voice and a way to fight back. We thank you, Carolyn, for being a Super Chatter on YouTube. And, again, we're seeing this new audience that we're reaching on YouTube as well, which is great. Let's go to Candy in Georgia on line three. Hey, Candy, welcome to JSecuo Live.
Hi. You might have answered this. Okay. I was wondering if you're investigating any cheating among the senators, because I personally feel there shouldn't be a runoff, that there was cheating involved.
There is going to be a runoff, so that's number one. Number two, the recount does not cover the Senate. It's only the presidential race, so that's number two here. Number three.
No mail-in ballots.
Nope. There are no mail-in ballots. There are absentee ballots and early voting. But what they've got to do, both parties are going to run this very. What is the sense of it? You were just there, Wes. What's the sense of it?
I tell you what. It's a very, very divided time.
Just in Georgia.
Yeah. And people are troubled. They really are. The American people need to have confidence in the fairness of their elections. And, Jay, that's part of what is at stake here, not only in Georgia but across the nation. There has been so much confusion and fraud and other things going on that the American people of both stripes politically are beginning to lose faith in our electoral system, and we simply cannot allow that to happen.
Dan, what's your sense of in Congress between now and now? There's talk that the Durham report, by the way, may come out in the next couple of weeks. But what are you hearing generally right now in the Senate?
Yeah.
In the House.
I think most are taking a wait and see. You know, I think there's probably more familiarity in this town with how this process works, and there's not a whole lot of surprise that it's taking some time. I think it's on the track that most would expect. I think most here, Jay, were around in 2000 when it took, something in the neighborhood of 5 weeks to resolve. I believe it was 37 days. I was actually working as a part of that process. So I think most here understand that the case is being built, and when the filings are made, that's when you look at the evidence and you see what's there. So, you know, I think there's probably maybe frustration and some antsiness across the country, but I think in town, I think this is probably how they expected it to proceed.
No, I think that's exactly right. What do you say? Give a little bit of the what do you expect this week?
You know, I expect this week, I think, you know, Congress is back. So there are some real things that still need to be dealt with. COVID, for instance, needs to be dealt with. We're getting great news on the vaccine. The numbers are going up. I think most of that's due to testing because hospitalizations, though, in some places are not good. For the most part, have been, and the death rate is not like going through the roof. But that's obviously a top concern, is when do we get our economy and our nation back to some sense of normalcy? And depending on where you are in the country, you could still be in like a full lockdown, kind of shutdown feeling mode. Other states that are kind of quasi open and other states that are very open. So I think that's huge. Of course, people are still on pins and needles, Dad, about the election.
No, they are.
I mean, this will be, I think, for a couple more weeks. And then, the moves we're going to talk about tomorrow that are potential are ones that would send shockwaves through the nation.
Yeah, so let's see what develops tomorrow in court. We're going to see what other actions might be filed. You have court determinations this week, and you have potentially groundbreaking lawsuits that may be filed this week. We will know in the hours ahead, and we will keep you posted. You're going to get a unique look at it. Support the work of the ACLJ and our matching challenge campaign at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Again, a welcome to our YouTube audience, Facebook, and our radio audience, of course, around the country.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.